meditation is learning how to just simply relax the mind. And sometimes people misunderstanding what meditation is, they're trying very hard, they're trying to do something, get rid of things, and that very trying is the opposite of relaxation. In the same way that if you're trying to relax your body, you can't be doing things with the body. You can't be running around. Even walking does not relax the body. You need to do something a bit more passive to relax the body. And the same thing with the mind. So when I'm going to be teaching this meditation today, emphasizing on how to relax the body and using exactly, precisely the same methods to relax your mind. And that is Buddhist meditation. So it's not about concentration. That is a very unfortunate translation, or rather mistranslation of the Buddhist word for samadhi. It is about stillness, relaxation, peace, stillness. Those are the words which describe what meditation is all about. So, first of all, you just sit comfortably. You don't need to sit on the floor. You don't get extra points for sitting on the floor. We want to make sure everyone sits comfortably. On a chair is more than fine. Or if you have your own little stool somewhere, you can bring that. We have these Zen stools, which you can see on the back over here. Just a little. Do you want to hold that up, Chris? So you see those stools? They're really comfortable for people to sit on. You can make them yourself. I think there's a few on sale in our library. And they're very, very comfortable to sit on. So you're doing this because it's going to relax you, relax your body. And if you're sitting and going through pain, all you ever get is more frustration. If you want to experience pain, then go to countries like Syria or Iraq, and they'll teach you all about pain and torture. And that's not what Buddhism is about at all. So we learn how to relax our body, sitting comfortably, first of all, whatever position is comfortable for you. And now to be able to take that relaxation deeper, we do need to be very aware of our body. Simple mindfulness. Now that awareness of your body is just very superficial at first. You have to keep your awareness on your body until the awareness gets strong enough. You can actually start to perceive tensions and tight spots in your body. And awareness is not enough by itself. We have to add this other wonderful quality, which is usual, common, so well understood in Buddhism, but often not practiced in meditation, just compassion, kindness, softness. Which means that when you see a part of the body which is tense, you learn how to relax it. The mindfulness gives you feedback. It's like looking at the gauge, your speed gauge in your car. You can see when that speed gauge changes, whether you're accelerating or you're slowing down. You know, it gives you feedback. And so this gauge in the body, you know, you can see through mindfulness if your body is tense or getting more relaxed. And that mindfulness giving you feedback is how you learn to relax your body more and more and more until your body gets really relaxed. Now, once it gets really relaxed, you don't stop there. You actually start to notice what I call the delight in relaxation. Now, you may think this is just an interesting technique, but this actually becomes very powerful later on in the meditation to be able to recognize the happiness of delight, the sheer joy of some of these states of relaxation. You all know that such a delight exists because people spend thousands of dollars going to Bali to sit on a chair next to the ocean and get relaxed. But you don't need to spend all that money and go through all the airports and have your flight delayed and lose your baggage and all the other stuff which happens when you go traveling. You can do it here every Saturday afternoon and save yourself a lot of trouble to relax deeper than if you were by the beach with nothing to do. So how that happens, the reason why people pay a lot of money for those holidays, there is a delight, there is a happiness in physical relaxation. It feels good. This is what I want you to start perceiving, noticing, when your body relaxes. It feels really nice. And if you notice a delight in that relaxation, strange thing happens, the relaxation goes deeper. Somehow or other, when you see something delightful, the mind automatically wants more, and you don't take the relaxation deeper, your mind takes it deeper for you. Simply because it notices delight, automatically it wants more of that, and it goes more and more relaxed. So, you do that with your body. Relaxing to the max, until your body feels so delightful. Once the body has relaxed and feels delightful and you've enjoyed yourself, it doesn't matter how long that takes, it really depends upon you, on the situation, the time of the day, the time of the month, the time of the year. So don't give things such fixed rules. You have to adapt. That's what mindfulness does. Gives you the feedback, see how much you can get relaxed. When you get the delight of relaxation, you can't relax any further. Fine. Now's the time to let go of the body and start doing the same thing, exactly the same thing to your mind. Now, I like this technique because most people, they have some idea of relaxing the body. They have no idea how to relax their mind. Which means that if you just start meditating and try to do this and do that, watch your breath, you can't do it. You're too tense and it becomes a struggle. You get fed up and frustrated and there's hardly any benefits at all. You know, you go away as crazy as you came in here. But if you can learn how to relax the body first of all, and then you'll find you can apply those exact same techniques to relax your mental world. So once the body feels good, then you look at your mental world, and it's full of all these problems from the past, all these worries about the future, all these things which are like aches and pains, but now not in the body, they're aches and pains in your mental world. And in exactly the same way, you relax your body. In exactly that way, you relax the mind. So it may have something in the past, something which happened to you this morning you can't really get rid of. Number one, you can't take an ache in the body and say, get out of here. You know, you have to deal with it, heal it, look after it, tend it, care for it. And then the aches and pains in the body disappear. In the same way, use mindfulness and some kindness to relax the body. You do exactly the same, awareness and kindness to relax your mental world. For example, somebody said something really nasty to you this morning. And you can't just say, get rid of it, get out of here. You be aware of it and be kind to it. And you find that that awareness and kindness, just like it relaxes the body, takes away the pressure and the tensions in your body. It takes away the pressure of the past. The past doesn't seem to be dragging you back with attention. When you're kind to something, you find it softens. So I call this softening the past. Aware of it, kind to it, allowing it to be. And it gets just like an ache in the body. It gets less tight, more loose, until it gets so loose, it just vanishes away. That's how you deal with the past. And the same maybe worried about the future. You may be the results of your biopsy are coming out on Monday, or kids are doing their year 12 exams, or whatever it is you're really afraid of. You can't just say, I'm not going to pay any attention to that thing in the future. You can't do this by force. Be aware and be kind. Be kind to your future. Soften it rather than fighting it. And then you find even the future gets so soft that it too just vanishes away. You are literally relaxing your mental world. So the aches and the pains of the body, the past and the future and the mind, they just disappear. And you have this whole attitude of not doing something. That's what the opposite of relaxation. It's just letting things be. As they say, if people go to Bali, to get away from it all. And what do you do when you're meditating? You don't get away from anything. All those thoughts and memories, they keep flooding in, even more than ever. You're not getting away from it, you're just really getting into it. So to get away from it, get away from the past, away from the future, by relaxing. And when you do get into the present moment, this place called now, again, relax with the now. as I say, be a friend to this present moment. Don't be an owner, don't be a controller, don't be a boss. People are really good. They're not bosses most of the time. But when it gets to their family, maybe then they're the boss. When it gets to their body, they're certainly the boss. When it gets to the mind, they're the control freak. You know, the dictator. So don't be a dictator to your mind. Otherwise, you'll abuse it. Be a friend. Have it like a relationship to your mental world of friendliness. It's your old mind. You've spent a lot of time together. In fact, you spent all your life together. If you're a Buddhist, you spent many lives together with your old mind. It's about time you've got a good relationship with it, because you can divorce your wife, you can get rid of your body with euthanasia, but you can't get rid of your mind any which way at all. So you're stuck with it, so you better learn how to love it and be kind to it, because you can't escape. So learn how to be kind to your mind, especially in this present moment. And it's all with that beautiful kindness, not trying to control it, not trying to cure it of all its miseries and bad habits, but caring for it. And just with that amount of caring, you'll find all the restlessness, the reason why you go thinking about so many things, is taken away. Many years ago, when I was teaching meditation, it wasn't trying to stop my restlessness, my wandering mind. It was asking, why does your mind wander in the first place? What's the cause of a mind wandering away? And I noticed when people were listening to my talks, if I gave a really boring talk, a really awful talk, then people would wander away. If I was kind to people, then people would stay with me. It became very obvious. You like hanging out with people who are kind. My mind likes hanging out with me when I am kind and caring and not so critical and judgmental. So I developed, when I'm watching my mind, not to be judgmental, not to be critical, not to be a control freak, but I look upon my mind as my dear old friend. So we hang out together. Your best friends, the people you like spending time with, do they criticize you and give you a hard time and tell you all the things which you're doing wrong? You're not eating the right foods, you're not sort of resting, you're not doing this, you should brush your teeth, clean behind your ears, wear clean underpants when you come to the Buddha Center just in case. Whatever it is. If people keep on going on like that, you don't want them as friends, always telling you what to do. And of course your mind will never stay with you. You'll never have any peace if you treat your own mind like that. So treat your mind with some respect, with some kindness, with some care. Mindfulness and kindness. You find then your mind settles down. Now, as your mind settles down in this present moment, because it's not doing very much, in fact it's hardly doing anything at all, that means your mindfulness starts to get stronger and stronger, which is one of the other important parts of meditation, to increase the power of your mindfulness. What that really means, it's like when you first get up in the morning and you haven't got the light on, you could hardly see what's in your room. But as I put the lights on, you can see much more. You can feel much more. You can taste much more when your mindfulness starts to get strong. Literally, you are waking up. That's what the word the Buddha means. It is the awakened one from the word buchati, to wake up. So you get mindfulness gets stronger and stronger and stronger through stillness. And then you start to really enjoy the meditation. You see so much more in your mind. And the other thing with mindfulness increasing, the stronger it gets. There is a free gift, like you get the free gift in the cornflakes packet. You get the free gift when you go traveling a lot. You get these frequent flyer points so you can upgrade. If you meditate a lot, the mindfulness gets upgraded, and the free gift is happiness. Weird. Until it lets you know how your mind works. But the stronger your mindfulness, the happier you feel. Really happy. And as you remain still in the present moment a long time, wow, your happiness gets off the scale. So that is what will happen if you follow the instructions. of just being mindful and being kind. The same way you relax the body, you relax the mind, and you bliss out of your skull. Oh, what fun. So, that's the marketing. Now we actually buy the product. So, sitting down, we can now do some meditation. Now I will guide you for the first 10 minutes or so, and then I will let you go off on your journey into the bliss and peace of relaxation. Here we go. So, closing your eyes. And deciding not to fight. We're not going to fight the world now. We're going to relax with the world. Not fighting our body, but learning how to be at peace with our body. But first of all, you may not be sitting in the best position. So if you want to adjust your body, wiggle your bottom, adjust the legs, have a scratch, have a nose blow, whatever you want to do, please do it now, out of respect for your bodily peace. And you can move right throughout the whole meditation if you need to, but especially the first couple of minutes. To relax the body through movement, through adjusting, scratching, whatever, coughing, blowing noses. And once that course relaxation of the body through bodily movement is complete, now relax the body even further. If there's any tightness or tension anywhere in the body, any pain, any irritation, be fully aware of it. And don't try and get rid of that pain, that ache, that irritation. Trying to get rid of it would make it worse. Like a barking dog, if you try and chase it away, it will come and bite you. Instead, be aware and notice that mindfulness gives you feedback. And you can notice how sensations in your body change. They're not always the same amount of pain or irritation. They lessen. Sometimes they get more. Find out why they get relaxed. What attitude of your mind, when sent to your body, makes the tensions be relieved, makes the aches a little less painful, what opens up blockages, what is that? By watching the dial of mindfulness, you'll find that it's kindness. Beautiful love, acceptance, embracing, caring, which relaxes your body deeper and deeper. Just like a mother comforting her child when it's sick, takes away the pain. Where a little act of kindness you see through the day takes away the pain of life when you see how beautiful it can be. Stay with your body. Whatever part is irritating, focus, use mindfulness and kindness, and feel the body open out and relax, like you are on some beach at a resort. Nothing to do, nothing to get rid of, just being here with your body, relaxing to the max. Feel the body relaxing even more until it feels delightful. See if you can be aware of the delights of relaxation. If you can notice the delight of relaxation, the relaxation goes even deeper, all by itself. then when the body is really relaxed, we can start to relax our mind, our mental world. All the problems of the past or the future, whichever comes up, be aware and be kind to it. Soften it. And see if you can do the same with your mental world. Just relaxing it. Until all that's left is this moment called now. And you look at this moment called now as your best friend. Don't try and hold this moment with force. Don't use willpower, use kindness. Stay with this moment. And enjoy the delight of a relaxed mental world. Getting away from it all. I will be quiet now and ring the bell around 4 o'clock. is getting very close to the end of the meditation. How relaxed are you? Body and mind. And how delightful is this feeling? Having nothing to do, nowhere to go. Just being in this moment, aware and kind. Content. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times to finish the meditation. Please don't open your eyes until the last ringing of the gong fades away. So you always come out of meditation gradually and gently at the 3rd ringing of the gong. So we do have obviously much more to meditation than just this wonderful piece of instruction. Well, I've been teaching this for years and going around the world teaching this. And when people start to relax their minds, they realize how easy meditation is. For those of you who've heard about other types of meditation, like watching the breath comes to you eventually. You just relax and become so peaceful that's the only thing left which is moving, and you just observe the breath. And your mind gets so peaceful. And if you do get sleepy during the meditation, it's just because you have to, because you're tired. And it just is a sign of all the running around we do in our world. And given the chance, the brain will just turn off for a while. If you fight, you just get more tense. If you let go, soon the sleepiness vanishes. When it does, you're so peaceful and having a wonderful time. Are there any questions from overseas? No, okay, very good. So questions from the floor, yeah. Here we go, boom, boom, boom. Yeah. Start working. What a
hello?
Oh. Yeah, go on.
Say you want to achieve something like enlightenment.
Yeah.
Where does the balance lie between intention and surrender?
Aha, okay. Remember, nirvana, enlightenment, is this very deep stages of letting go, being so content you don't need anything anymore. It's a good sign that if you are fully enlightened, and you found a little bottle and you rubbed it and a genie came out and said, "Sir, according to our tradition, which still holds in 2014 in Perth, Australia, you now have 3 wishes. What would you want?" And if you're in line, you say, "Nothing." That's actually a sign. There's nothing you want. Perfectly at peace and content. That's a sign. So you can understand peaceful contentment, the ending of things like craving and wanting. How on earth can that be achieved by wanting something? So we learn how to be so still. And then we realize that everything we ever wanted, all the things we intended for, all the things we struggled and strived for, you have those already. But we don't notice it because we're just struggling and wanting all sorts of other stuff. So this is where even enlightenment is a very powerful, very deep stage of letting go. Not of control. So you can't work your way to enlightenment. You can't struggle. All those techniques which you learn in the world, which give you success in life, don't work on this path. It's a totally different path. But to find that balance in the world, you know, you find once you've really relaxed and are peaceful, you find your brain, because it's relaxed, now has energy. The mindfulness is really strong after a deep meditation. So you have creativity as well. You literally can see things which you can't see otherwise. And so with that creativity, with that energy, it's amazing how successful you can be in life. I often say to people that as far as monks go, I'm a very successful monk. You know, for the monk business. So how can you be so successful? How can you work so much? I was going to say work hard. But I don't work hard, I work soft. Not hard. Just give it a slightly different meaning. Don't work hard, work soft. And you get much more done. Of higher quality. So all the things you work hard for. Struggling, striving, pushing yourself because you want to get the work done. You find you stuff up your mind, you stuff up your relationships, stuff up your health. You don't get anything done anyway. You work softly, carefully, mindfully, kindly. It's amazing how much you get done in the world. So the nice thing about this is not an either or. If I get enlightened and then I can't work, I can't do my job. If I meditate, I'll just sort of bliss out and I won't get anything done at home or in my office. Quite the opposite. You get more done, the more peaceful you are. Paradoxical, but that's true. That makes sense to you?
Thank you.
Okay, Chris.
Bhante, can I ask you a technical question?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. When you've been sitting, you've got reasonably good focus. I won't use the word concentration because I know how you feel about that word.
Okay. Concentration, oh no.
And you're established. And this question is with respect to the Satipatthana Sutra and the Buddha's instructions for meditation on the breath. So that the first quatrain is on the body, the second is on feelings, the third is on perceptions and mind objects, and the fourth is on consciousness. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay. Can I correct you?
No.
Okay, please, carry on first.
Is that basically?
No, it's the second tetrad is on Vedana.
Vedana, that's what I mean, yeah. Vedana.
It's pleasure and pain.
Yep.
So, it's a really important point. In the Anapanasati Sutra of the Buddha, you're only watching the breath, at the very beginning.
Yeah.
And then you get in the feeling, the joy. What I pointed out at the beginning, focusing on the delight of just being relaxed. Peaceful. And the next part is focusing on not perceptions, on the jitta, this thing we call mind.
That was my question. My question is the third tetrad, and actually samadhi without an object, okay, without an acquired sign, and doing that practice. So you've got good concentration, it's gone from physical breath to mental breath to the light, okay. And now you're just sitting watching the mind, okay, yeah. In the third tetrad. Can you explain a little bit about that practice? Okay. What is the goal of that and where does it lead to, please?
Okay, so when you're watching the delight of the, basically of the breath and relaxation, the body vanishes. And you're in the sixth sense. Now, sometimes we live in a Western world which has totally abandoned the idea of a consciousness of mind, the sixth sense. You know, quite frankly, I've spent a lot of time going overseas in McGill University, supposed to be giving a lecture or seminar for the day on consciousness and the mind, you know, from science and from meditators. It turned into something else, which was a bit gross, but I spend a lot of time trying to really say this mind, this jitter, is something totally independent of the body. And once you understand that framework, it makes so much sense. You're going to calm this body down, keep it still till it disappears. So the first 8 parts of the Anapanasati Sutra, we're learning how to let go of this body and the 5 senses.
The first 8?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, it's a mental breath, that's good, but how you perceive the mental breath is for the joy of it, for the happiness of it. It's like, you know, seeing Chris and noticing how happy you are, rather than just, you know, how, I was going to say something, is that you watch Ajahn Brahm, instead of watching, you know, how fat he is, how happy he is. You know, just so your perception is of the joy and the happiness part. And then it becomes this, that disappears with the body and the breath disappears. And then you've just got this jitter, this mind.
Can you say something about that, please?
Yeah, how it usually occurs for most people is they see a light in their mind. A light.
Yeah, okay. Were you talking about nimittas?
Nimittas, yeah, exactly.
Is there a way to do samadhi without a sign, not with a sign?
Of course there is. There is a way of bypassing that sign. But it's about the nimitta, the light which comes up in your mind. But it's not really that helpful. Because when you have like a light in the mind, you have something which is a little bit more tangible to work with. And the reason why the nimittas, these lights, don't come up is because we don't develop enough delight. And the delight is like a sign of the power of your mindfulness. The more delight, the stronger your awareness is. So sometimes when a person, their body vanishes in meditation, really mad vanishes, there's lots of meditators, this is I teach a lot, they report to me they just go into, it's a dark place, it's peaceful, but there's no sort of oomph in it. And it's because as Westerners, in our world, we're afraid of happiness. And as a psychologist, you know this. Sometimes when happiness comes, we want to destroy it. There must be something wrong. And I'm not allowed to be happy because I've been a bad boy when I was a kid. And your mum said you're never good enough. Whatever it was, there is a huge amount of resistance to being happy. And that really comes up when you meditate, which means that you don't cultivate enough delight. And the mind is just kept down, it's subdued, rather than allowing it to fly into this incredible, powerful mindfulness and happiness. And it can also be scary as well, because you've got power, and people don't know how to use power, they get afraid of it.
So you have to keep relaxing yourself as your charge increases, as you go deeper and deeper into that experience.
Yeah, and then mindfulness shows you that if you want to have stronger mindfulness, you have to let go more, be more still, and it just, it's a natural process. The more still you are, the stronger your mindfulness. The stronger your mindfulness, the happier you are. And it's just like the lights come up in your mind. What you can see is during the range retreat, this one lady, you know my simile of washing the toilet bowl and seeing the most beautiful lump of shit in the whole world I've ever noticed. It's an absolutely true story. But one of the ladies during the range retreat, she was actually sitting on the toilet and looking at the tile. And she thought, the tile became just, not a fancy bathroom tile, just a plain white tile because, you know, we do it on the cheap. And the tiles actually came from a fire sale, literally. A warehouse was on fire and somebody bought those tiles and they literally were that. And so it's an ordinary tile. And, you know, she was looking at that because she was meditating beforehand, sitting on the toilet, and the tile became absolutely gorgeous. Amazingly beautiful. Now, that is very common in meditation. That's a sign that your mindfulness is really strong. What you see. And many people have these smells. They can smell fragrances everywhere. Mm. Just because your sense of smell has just got really beautiful. And you feel, if you feel the body, just stroke up, it's incredibly soft. That you're, basically, that's a sign that your mindfulness is getting very strong. 5 senses that vanish. And that mindfulness, it sees this mind, it's gorgeous. So once you have that gorgeousness, that happiness there, then it's nearly always you see the beautiful light. If you're peaceful, you haven't developed the happiness part, and the 5 senses have vanished, then you don't really get the strong nimittas.
It seems to me that that is a crossroads in the where long-term or medium-term meditators who are going deeper and deeper into the mind can get to the crossroads, and they can take a very wrong turn and park themselves in a place of sloth and torpor, of laxity, and spend years meditating. They think that they're meditating, and meditating for many hours, and actually just being like a Thai water buffalo, and having this sort of peaceful, cruisy space instead of this brilliance or this luminosity that you speak about.
Indeed, and one of the reasons is, again, because, and I say this is technical, but it's an important part because this keeps coming up even recently. I think it was just on Wednesday night in London, somebody asked me, he said, but you get attached to that happiness. And I have an idea in Buddhism, we're not supposed to be attached to anything. Everything we have to be attached to. And I counter with just the first little say, if you're on the back of a motorbike in London, please be attached. Don't fall off. And I say that because obviously in life there are many things we have to be attached to. And when it gets to the bliss of these meditations, I quote now the Buddha. This is Parsadika Sutta. You've heard me say this before. This is recorded. So if you look at the Parsadika Sutra of the Digha Nikaya, that's the place where the Buddha answers that question. Precisely. What happens if you really start to indulge in the bliss of these meditations? And that's where the Buddha says specifically, only four possibilities, first, second, third, fourth stage of enlightenment. That's what happens if you get attached to the bliss of the jhanas. In other words, we're supposed to do this. This is what we're supposed to do. Remember some Thai forest monk, I forget who it was, he said, being attached to the jhanas, that's not a problem. It's attached to all the other stuff, which is a problem. Attached to the jhanas, the bliss of meditation, that's not a problem at all. That leads to being enlightened. So that's when these nimittas come up and they're really powerful. Oh, just get into them, go for them. And that's when those stages of meditation in the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th is, you know, you've got to sort of stabilize that beautiful light. Empower it.
Spread it.
Now, first of all, you experience it. That's number 9. Then samadhang is, that's actually the 10th. Sampasadhana, that means just bring it more joy. I call it, polishing it, brightening it, making the light more radiant, more intense. And then the samadhang, the 11th stage, is you keep it still so it's not going around the place. Focus, perfectly still, incredibly bright. And the 12th one is when you enter the jhanas.
Is there any other way in that stage?
There is other ways of going into the jhanas, but that is actually just going through the bliss. In other words, it's bypassing the nimitta stage, but yes, through a feeling of great bliss and peace. And
does it always have to be consolidated through a nimitta into jhana, or can you just get actually that luminosity in the
luminosity
in that stage?
Is fine, but you have to really sort of get a lot of energy up.
Thank you.
High energy, beautiful letting go. Because the more you let go, the more less you do, the more mindfulness gets a big boost.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Pass the microphone over. For those of you who need to go, please, you cannot offend a monk, so you can go any time, especially if you need to go to the toilet and do some other letting go. Yes.
I think you just answered it, but, how long should you, if you've got the time or whatever, there's no danger in just going deeper and deeper and into your meditation. Like, if you find it, I don't know if it's endorphins or whatever, if it's going good.
If it's going good, carry on.
Yeah. It's like in one sitting, like if you want to do it for half the night or something, or something like that,
there's no time limit. It's only here because we advertise 45 minutes, so I try and keep that. But when I teach a retreat, I like telling jokes, but the jokes are there for a purpose. We keep no bell silence. No bells. I hate ringing this gong because sometimes I'm having a good time and I have to come out for you and ring this blooming gong. I don't want to. I'm enjoying myself. A few times that's been very difficult for me, sitting up here, ringing this gong at 4 o'clock. And if I had the choice, if you weren't here, I'd be still meditating here. So keep it natural. There are times when 10 minutes is enough. You realize you're getting nowhere. You're just pushing yourself against a brick wall, it's not going to work. Other times, half an hour is just the right time. Sometimes a couple of hours, and you're having a great time.
Yep.
So if you're having a good time, please carry on.
Yeah. I just thought, you know, because it sounds a bit weird, sort of like...
Yeah, no, it's not weird at all, it's natural. Sometimes even as a monk, meditate for many years, and there are some times when I'm just really hot, and, you know, I mean, meditation hot, not full of heat hot. Yeah. You really get into it, and you're just really going, and just you don't want to come out. Yeah. And there are other times, you know, maybe you're tired, or you're sick, or there's something wrong, and after half an hour now, you realize this is enough.
Yeah.
And after many years of meditating, you know that. You know whether you're just wasting time carrying on, or whether you're carrying on, wow, this is going to really work this time.
And so I think, like, if you sit down at a certain time each day, it's okay. Like,
that's
know,
okay
like,
as well.
Sometimes
but
you go through a bad patch and then you don't do it for a few days and then it's harder to get back into it.
Well, if you keep meditating a certain time and you force yourself, then you'll start giving it up.
So it's better like to do it when you feel like it.
Exactly. And I say that simply because if you force yourself, like anything else, the mind gets resentment and anger like you force a kid. You know, you don't use force, but sometimes you can use a bit of rewards, a bit of temptation. I give myself a chocolate cake if I meditate, or whatever. Whatever it is, sometimes don't use the punishment part of it, because that really turns the mind away from meditation. Use the kindness.
Because I find like I go through a good patch, and then like maybe a week and a half or something, then it's like, oh, you know, I don't know what's going on, sort of, that's not that.
And the main thing is when you really start to delight in the meditation, it's such a beautiful thing to do. Then you always schedule it in above other things. You may have your favorite movie, maybe some soap opera or some cricket match or something people like watching. And when it's you're doing something you really want to watch and enjoy, you know, you always the mind wants to do it.
Yeah, because I didn't know if it was like a training of the mind or if it's more like, you know, do it when you want to.
Yeah, it's what happens to the mind. You don't do it, you don't train, but as you enjoy the meditation more and more, you get more happiness out of it. You look forward to it. Yeah. And it's just like the taking the dog out for a walk.
Yeah.
As soon as the dog sees you touch the leash, wags its tail, woof, woof, I want to go.
Yeah.
And that's like my mind when I meditate. I sit down and I say, yeah, you didn't take me for meditation. Woof, 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 woof. And my tail wags, 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 because I've had such a lovely time meditating before. But if I force the dog to go for a walk when it doesn't want to, then the dog won't do that anymore. Yeah. You get sort of... Okay, there's another one more question over here. Yeah, we keep going. Yeah, here we go. Here we go.
Recently, a friend was... brought up to me, there's this book written by Ajahn Sumedho on Song of Silence.
Ah, yes, yeah.
And when he was talking about this, and suddenly now I got this, notice that song, I picked it up, and it's just only recently. And it's been all like a constant thing, and how do we address it
when
we meditate?
If you look into the Hindu meditation, they have that as a Hindu technique of meditation, but it's never really been used in Buddhist meditation. And there's a good reason for that, is because, you know, we're trying to let go of all sound. And you find that you can start that, you can focus in the sense of everything else can disappear, but you're still left with the sound. So you can't take it deeper. So it can go only so far. Which is why that it's great to be able to let go of all sounds as soon as possible. I remember one of the monks who was Ajahn Manindo, and he had a good opportunity of meeting the great Mahasi Sayadaw and taking him for a walk in the forest in England many years ago. This was the original Mahasi Sayadaw, and he asked him, "What do you think about the sound of silence?" And Mahasi sort of said, "If it's meditation, there's no sound at all."
So, I mean, it is like we didn't want to pay notice. I mean, I don't want to pay notice that it's been there. You know, yeah. you know, it's there all the time. And how do we?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you can feel the humming of the air or whatever it is, but it's not there all the time. In the sense that your saliva, the taste of saliva in your mouth is there all the time, but it becomes a hindrance. You need to sort of let it vanish and disappear. When things vanish and disappear, then you're free of them. So that is why the breath is better than the sounds, even what they call sound of silence. You know, it's an oxymoron. If it's silent, you don't hear anything. If there's a sound, it's completely different. It's not the sound of silence. Silence is no sound at all. So it's a sound. And it's useful for people because it stops them thinking, it gives them something they can focus on, and it can actually get rid of a lot of problems. But it can only go so far. In other words, it's soon you get to a dead end, and you can't go further. With something like the breath, the breath actually changes as you get more and more calm and peaceful. Because, you know, you're being still, you don't need so much oxygen for your body. The breath starts to get less and less. It's just its nature. And it gets so soft and so almost hardly not there, it can actually vanish. And the sound of silence can't do that. That's why the breath meditation was taught by the Buddha.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, there we go. Some really good questions today. So thank you for those who asked the questions, and thank you for staying on to listen to them. So now we can actually do our prostration to the Buddha. And then if you've got any more questions, please, I'll be up here for a while. And again, for those of you who just come starting off meditation, maybe there's people here who've been meditating for years, people come just for 6 months. So we have all sorts of questions, and everyone, the basics to the refined, they're all welcome, all respected.